Okay, this is Unit 3, and welcome back. This is Jim Oswald again, and we're going to start looking at variables in mathematics, at least for our starting point. And basically, what we're talking at is looking at variables and equations, scary-looking, arcane things like this, or maybe like this, and it's like, it looks like this strange language, like some sort of hieroglyphics or demotic or something, some bizarre thing that, if you're not really comfortable with math, there's really a little bit of intimidation involved in it. But it's all in how you look at it. And there's another way to look at mathematics, particularly looking at the variables. So let's consider one of them. Just think of the variables as being an empty box that holds something. Now you can't see in the box, but you have information about it, you know, the relationships constructed by the equations, and you just have to do something to figure out what's in the box. And that's one way of looking at it, but there's another way of looking at it that I think is a little bit more powerful. And that is looking at mathematical expressions like their fancy pants sentences. Okay? How do I get that? Well, let's start with numbers. Numbers are just nouns, or sometimes adjectives. You know, you multiply 6 times x, where x is a variable, the number's acting as a noun. Variables are just pronouns. Well, and sometimes adjectives, you can have x times y. Just like you can have pronouns functioning as adjectives, his shoes, her hat, those are modifying, you know, they can sometimes be functioning that way as well. But again, they're just language structure. Your operators, that's why, you know, we call things like plus, minus, multiplication, division, hey, they're just verbs. Parentheses, all they do is mark off the clauses or the phrases that are part of the larger whole of the sentence. Then you get the little connecting things like the equal sign, approximately equal to, greater than or equal to, less than or equal to, not equal. There's a whole bunch of those. All they are is conjunctions. Nouns, adjectives, pronouns, verbs, clauses, phrases, conjunctions. Hello. It's just a language. Okay, languages aren't easy to learn, but that's sort of like where we're going. Now, one of the things I like about looking at mathematical expressions as just being sentences is that with a sentence you can set up relationships. You can understand that there's relationships going on in a different way. Now let me illustrate that, okay? So let's view the equations of the sentence, and let's pick a really complicated sentence here. I am your father. Okay, not really very complicated. Two pronouns, I, which is the subject of the sentence, then another pronoun, your, which is describing father, which is another noun. Once you know who I represents, you've got to define who your is. So, for instance, if I happens to refer to me, your has to be one of my two sons. I only had sons. Hey, I mean, once that meaning is assigned to the first pronoun, first variable, instantly the second one is defined for you to some degree. Conversely, if I refers to my father, okay, I've got two brothers. It's one of the three of us, okay? Okay, I had to slide that in. If I refers to Darth Vader, your is going to either be Luke Skywalker or Leia Organa. Now, this goes both ways. If I define your as being, say, my elder son, that immediately tells you who the I refers to. That would be me.
If I say that your is referring to Luke Skywalker, immediately you know that I is Darth Vader, at least if you do Star Wars, which not everybody did. But you get my point. Here we have values assigned to one pronoun controlling the meaning or the content of the other pronoun. Variables will act in the same way. Let's take a look at a little bit of working with variables here, okay? Solving an equation. Let's start with the ones that we had up in front. 3x plus 6 is equal to 2x plus 4. Well, we want to find x, so we've got to get rid of that 2x on the right. So, when you're dealing with an equation, you do the same thing to both sides. You're going to end up not changing anything substantially. So let's subtract 2x from both sides. There we go. Subtract that off. Now we've got x plus 6 is equal to 4. Still doesn't tell me what x is. I've got to get rid of that 6. So let's subtract 6 from both sides. And x is equal to minus 2. We have our solution. Very simple. Now you can plug minus 2 back in there if you want. 3 times minus 2 is minus 6. 6 minus 6 is 0. 2x, well, twice minus 2 is minus 4. 4 plus minus 4, 0. So it works. So let's tackle something a little different here. Instead of getting an answer, let's get a relationship. 4x plus 2y equals 8. Okay, I want to find out what x is. So let's subtract 2y from both sides. We get 4x is equal to 8 minus 2y. I still want to know what x is. So divide both sides by 4, and you get x is equal to 2 minus half of whatever y is. Does that tell you exactly what x is? No. It does not. It tells you how x and y relate to each other. So you pick any y you want. Pick 14. Well, what's half of 14 is 7. So 2 minus 7 would be minus 5. So x is minus 5. Oh, if you want to take y as being minus 14, so we've got, let's see, what's half of minus 14? That's minus 7. So 2 minus minus 7, that's 2 plus 7, that's 9. So x would be 9. Try a handful of these out. You're suddenly going to discover that it works no matter what you do. But what if you wanted to solve this the other way? You wanted to really know what y is. Well, we start with the same thing. Then we subtract 4x from both sides. So, like that. Now we've got 2y equals 8 minus 4x. Divide it all by 2. Y equals 4 minus 2x. So, whatever x is, if x is 2, y is 0. Twice x is 4. Twice 2 is 4. 4 minus 4, 0. Etc., etc. So this just keeps going on and on. And there's just any number you put in there, there will be a y to correspond to it. Just like for any y you put in the last one, you'd have an x. It's really not that complicated. Now, let's play with parentheses a little bit. Okay, x plus 4 is equal to y minus 7. Well, you can break that x plus 4 down. You've got the x here, that's multiplied times y minus 7. You've got the 4 here, that's multiplied times y minus 7. So you multiply this across that, you multiply this across that, you end up with this mess. Wait a minute, we've got a y here and a y here. I could divide that y out. And, you know, these two are both divisible by 7. So let's try doing that and see what we get. You've got y times x plus 4 minus 7 times x plus 4. And we've just recollected it back into the same thing. But you can see how that works. It's really not complicated. What it is something that you have to practice and practice. You do it for a while, and it's going to start coming naturally to you. Hey, I struggled with this when I was a kid, too. That was a long time ago. But I found it fascinating, and I just kept at it and at it and at it. And now it's like almost, but not quite, instinct. So that's how you play with the equations. We'll look at using equations later in this system of practical math. Now, the next thing I want to talk about is exponents. Okay, what's that? You've got x times x. Here's your exponent right here, generally written slightly above and just to the right of your variable. It's the count of the number of times that you multiply the variable times itself. So x times x, x squared. X times x times x, that's x to the third. Here's x to the fourth. Here's x to the seventh. Okay, I'm getting cross-eyed here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Yep, that's x to the... You can see how when you start working with some of the larger exponents, it's a whole lot easier to write it like this than it is this mess. Okay. So, let's take a look at multiplying variables that are raised to a power. X to the fifth times x to the fourth. You add these two together, you get x to the ninth. X squared times x, that's x to the third. Nobody ever writes the one up here. But implicitly, when you see the variable x, it's x to the first power. So you divide the two, x to the tenth divided by x to the fifth, and you get x to the fifth. And x squared divided by, rather divided into x3, you just get x. And then x to the fourth divided by x to the... Time out. What's with... that's minus 2 there. That's not a positive number. How can you multiply something times itself a negative number of times? That ain't right. Except, yes, that it is right. If you're dealing with a negative exponent, that means you're dividing by that. So x to the minus second is 1 divided by x squared. X to the minus first is 1 over x. X to the minus fifth, 1 over x to the fifth. So when you're dividing x to the tenth by x to the fifth, that's x to the tenth plus x to the minus fifth, which is, of course, x to the fifth. Same game here. X to the third divided by x to the minus second. Get this, and you end up with that. X to the fourth by x divided by x to the sixth. That's x to the fourth, x minus six, which is x to the minus second, which of course is x, 1 over x squared. And of course, x squared over x squared, there you have that. And there's x to the zero, which is 1. Anything raised to the zero power is always 1. If you think about it, it makes sense. X to the 0 times x to the first, add the two exponents together, you get x. Okay, what's 1 times x? It's x. It really makes sense when you look at it. Right now, I'm just going to tell you about these. We will come back to them later. Let's move on to that scary word, budgets. We're not talking something very popular, I don't think. But what is a budget? It's planning out how your money is going to be spent in comparison to what you bring in. So you have to know what you bring in, and you have to know how you're going to spend it. Now, that sounds like a prison. It's not. It's a guide. It's a tool to allow you to plan what you're going to do with your money and do it in a way that's responsible, that's not going to get you into financial trouble. And from the other side of it, when you construct a listing of what's going on, you suddenly know where your money's coming from, which you probably knew that anyway. But what you probably didn't really know is exactly where it's all going to and when it gets there and how it gets there. People frequently, I've heard them make the statement, I don't know where all my money's going. Okay. That means you need to sit down and figure out where it is going. That means you need to build a budget. So, like, what things show up in budgets? Well, stuff like your housing, like the rent, the mortgage, you know, whatever that is. Utilities, things like electricity, natural gas, telephone, water. You could throw in a lot of other things there. Food, which is not only including what groceries you buy, but the restaurants you go and buy food at, what you get out of vending machines, you're starting to get the feel for it, what you buy from the, like, donut shop or the ice cream vendor. It includes transportation, so the payments on the vehicle you bought, the fuel for it, the repairs on it, the oil changes on it, the tires on it, bus tickets, train tickets, taxi rides, transportation, insurance. Well, not everybody has that, but it's generally considered a useful thing to have. Life insurance, health insurance, homeowner's insurance, maybe your apartment dweller's insurance, insurance on your automobile, your motorcycle, enough. Let's get on with the next one. Clothing. Now, if you happen to be somebody that makes your own clothing, that would be the buying the cost of your thread, the cloth, the needles, the patterns you use to make it if you use those, but still clothing. Entertainment, movies, books, vacation, hobbies, cable TV or internet TV if you use that. Tithes and offerings. This is one that's very heavily neglected here, okay? The giving to your church, to the prayer church organizations, you know, that needs to be part of your plan, and you need to know what that's looking like. Most people, when they look at what they're giving compared to what they have coming in, are surprised at how it stacks up against that. Usually surprised at how little they really give. I have known a few people who look at it and were surprised at how much they gave. That's kind of the better place to be in. And then there's savings. Okay, there's nothing wrong with savings. Now, the reason for your savings could be a poor one. If you're saving it up so you can squander it on yourself later, well, that's not such a hot thing. In fact, that's probably not a good thing. But if you're putting money by so that if you are temporarily incapacitated, you break a leg and you can't go to work, you get some sort of problem where you're unemployed for a while, you've got something to fall back on. You can still provide for your family out of your savings. Or you could be saving for a large purchase. You're looking to have a new dwelling. Your family's grown. You need a little bit more room. You're putting money by to be able to do that. Perfectly valid. So savings is something you need to plan in. And again, we'll look at that a little bit later as well. Paying for education. Look, CLI is free, but if you want a formal degree, there is some cost to that. Somehow or other, there just always seems to be a little cost to that. But the payment for your education, And then there's miscellaneous things as well. You know, all those things, if you're not really sure where to put that, but you got to put it somewhere. Fine. But you see what I'm driving at. Now, you may choose to organize it using other categories than this. The particular categories you use aren't that important. What's important is having categories you use to organize things, understanding what those categories are, picking ones that are, to you, significant and meaningful, and keeping track of it. There's another concept here that we need to look at, and that's fixed versus variable expenses. That sounds instinctive, but it's not necessarily. Fixed expenses are things that are always going to be the same, or pretty much so anyway, on an every month basis, and generally you don't have a lot of control over those. Okay, your rent or your mortgage payments, they're fixed. Yeah, when you did the agreement with the landlord for the rent, or when you made the agreement with the bank to borrow the money for your dwelling, you could have had something less. You could have taken a less beautiful apartment. You could have bought a less expensive dwelling. But once that's in place, it's not going to change. Insurance policies, again, once you agree to a particular insurance, that's going to stay the same, at least for the period of time you hold that insurance. Utilities, some of those vary widely with the season. I live in the United States. I live in Illinois. We get temperatures up in the 100 degree plus mark on occasion during the height of the summer. Boy, I'll tell you, when that's happening, power bills to air condition my house get to be absolutely high compared to the much milder months of spring or fall, where, you know, windows are open. I'm not heating or cooling anything. And of course, winters can get down, well, below 0 Fahrenheit. Again, I'm thinking Fahrenheit. I'm in America. And let me tell you, the gas bill for heating the house can really rise. But many of the utilities, the internet provider I use, the cable provider I use to provide TV, that stays pretty stable month to month to month. Telephone, oh yeah, that's rock stable. You see the point. Payments on the vehicle, if you actually own money on that, they're going to be fixed costs. You get the drift, okay? Now, on the other hand, there's the variable expenses that do change from month to month, like entertainment. I may go out to a couple of movies, but the next month I might not go to a movie at all. Entertaining. There are times during the year where my wife and I entertain guests a little more frequently, and sometimes it's like we hardly entertain at all. While I am creating this lesson, we're in the middle of the COVID pandemic. We're doing hardly any entertaining. I mean, we just don't, because it's being discouraged by the government for good and medical reasons. Of course, clothing. You don't buy clothing every month. Subscriptions to magazines. There's all those internet gaming sites. There are internet sites of other sorts where you pay money for them when you use them, but you don't always use them. Those can be variable costs as well. Those you have some degree of control over. For instance, your food budget. Some months you're going to be more expansive on what you buy. Some months you'll be a little tighter fisted. Depends on what your funds look like, right? So, but knowing which is which, with your fixed expenses, you can't do much. But if your outgo, if what you're paying out, is larger than what you're taking in, you're cruising for trouble, and you need to start looking at what you can cut back. And it's here in the variable expenses where you're going to be finding those things that you can vary. You can change them and have a change in what you've got. Okay, another thing you can do with a budget, and again, this is something that you can do as you track it over time. You can look for cash leakage. You know, money that's going somewhere that really it doesn't need to be going. You signed up for a service that you're no longer using, but you're still paying for it. I can remember Amazon had an Amazon thing where you could download books for nothing. It wasn't every book out there, but there were a lot of books you could download and read freely on their little computer reader. And I did that for a while, and I forgot that I was doing it, wasn't downloading anything. That's cash leaking out. It's not doing anything. I'm sure your imagination can find other things. Spending beyond your limits. Now, when you set up a budget, you look at, okay, here's what I've got coming in. Here's what I have to spend that's fixed. Here's how I'm going to allocate the remaining amount of my income on the variable things, the things that are going to be ones I can control the amount of a little better. Spending beyond your limits, that's what's going to get you in trouble. Now, I realize that 1 month, for instance, you may have allocated $20 a month for clothing. I'm just picking a number out of the air. Well, last month you didn't spend that $20, and now this month you've got to buy something, and you're going to spend $40 on it. Okay, you really haven't gone beyond your limits for the whole year, just more than you had for this month, but you've got left over from last month. So you have to think that through. So, but if you persistently spend more than you budgeted, you're asking for trouble. Buying luxuries that pretend to be necessities. One of the great wise counselors on financial things in this country, one of his great lines is, if you've got a really nice car and you are really having trouble making ends meet, get rid of the car, buy an old clunker that runs. It may look terrible, but it runs. It's going to be a whole lot cheaper, and use that until you're out of trouble, and then think about what you're going to do next. Other luxuries that pretend to be necessary. The latest fashions in clothing. Okay, I'm not a fashions person. I tend to do just like, okay, this is a classic that's going to last me until I outgrow it, or until I wear it out, or until I do something damaging to it accidentally. Getting the latest styles, that's a luxury. Having the latest and greatest smartphone, even though your other one was doing everything you needed. Okay, you do need that phone, I presume. But the latest and greatest smartphone, that's a luxury that is pretending it's necessary. You get the drift. One thing you need to look at in your budget is tithing, not only to God, but to yourself. Now, let me make sense out of that, and I alluded to this earlier. You need to be putting by for your own emergencies. Hey, I don't know when terrible things are going to happen in my life. You know, when my car engine blows up or something, or I have a flat tire, and I have to buy a new tire or a pair of new tires so that they're balanced on my car. So I put money by. My wife and I tithe to ourselves. We have a nest egg that when there's an emergency, we're able to tap into that. Conversely, I think I mentioned earlier, we both have two sons. We have our sons that sometimes they need some help. They're married. They have children of their own. And once in a while, there's something they need to do that is a meaningful and appropriate thing to do. And we can help out a little bit because we have tithed ourselves, we have saved. Again, as I said earlier, saving, it's not always like that fellow that decided to build himself new storehouses and live off the fat of his production in the Gospels. In this case, it's saving so that we can not be a burden or help somebody else with their burdens. That's the kind of thing I'm looking at tithing yourselves. Don't count on windfalls. Oh, man. People do that. Well, you know, I'm going to get this money and it'll bail me out. You know, I'll have this sudden thing. I'll go out and find a, you know, diamond or something. I don't know. You can't count on that. Now, that doesn't mean windfalls happen. Windfalls do happen. It's not that they don't happen, but don't count on them. When they do happen, give God thanks for the windfall and then use it. But don't plan for a windfall and use the resources the windfall represents before it arrives. Wait until it arrives at least. And even then, maybe you need to be putting a lot of that windfall aside, tithing yourself. That may be God's way of preparing you for something He sees coming that you don't. And of course, beware of cost creep. Hey, I don't know about your world, but in my world, things tend to get more expensive over time. You know, that, you know, when I was in college, which was a long time ago, fuel for my vehicle cost less than one-tenth of what it does now. And that costs creep. They crept. That sneaks up on you. It's going to start biting into other things. And you're not likely to notice it if you're not keeping track of what you're doing and working with a budget. So there's a point to budgets, and it's a good one. So, with that said, let's sneak away from budgets and go to another thing, debt. You know, it's not the be-all and end-all. Scriptures say, owe no man anything but love, and I respect that. But buying a house. Okay, in most places I know, that's a major investment, and frankly, it's a very large investment that most people can't do out of their resources, particularly people that are young marrieds. I remember being a young married, and we were scraping to get by. It was a long time ago. But that sometimes happens, purchasing a house, purchasing some vehicles, for instance. Borrowing is not forbidden by Scripture. Discouraged? Yes. But not totally forbidden. And again, as I said, some purchases, houses, automobiles, are so large that it's a rare person that can have enough money to just pay cash for them, particularly a house, and it takes a long time to save that kind of money, particularly for younger folks. So yeah, once in a while, to do something reasonable like that, you have to enter into debt. But understand, if you're borrowing money that will be paid back with interest over time, you're going to pay much more than you borrowed back, sometimes two or three times as much if you're paying it over a long enough period of time. That is something that you need to think through. We will look at the mathematics of that later. But right now, I just want to put it on the table. And remember, that's really easy to incur. I mean, you can get into debt surprisingly easy. Getting out of it is anything but easy. Okay? So remember, be wary. So once you're in debt, how do you get out of it? step one is to look at your debts. What do you owe? And when you're looking at your debts, not only write down how much you owe, but write down what is the interest rate I'm paying on that borrowed money. Some interest rates are usurious. I mean, credit cards, oh my goodness, 10, 12, 18% per year? I mean, they're making a lot of money off of what you bought until you get it paid off. Now, did I just say that you should not have a credit card? No, I don't. I did not say that. What I am saying is, if you're going to have a credit card, you might just want to make sure you pay it off every month, which is what my wife and I have finally disciplined our lives to do. So, make a list of your debts and put down your interest rates. Then, figure out where your money goes. Get a whole bunch, you know, like 3, 4, 5, 6 months of your financial records. Sort it out. Look at income. Look at outgo. Figure out where that money is going. And then look at where there's extras. There's almost always extras. Even in really tight budgets, there's something you can do. Maybe instead of that roll roast, you can buy ground beef, which is a lot cheaper. Maybe instead of eating that beef every night for supper, or whatever other meat you happen to choose for supper, maybe once in a while you should, you know, stick to eggs or rice and beans or something. Eat less expensive foods. Hey, it's nice to have cable for your TV, but if you're in debt and you're struggling to get by, maybe that's something you can drop. You get the point. You know, that cup of coffee from the coffee shop 3 or 4 times a week, I've priced that stuff. Those coffee shop coffees can be pretty expensive. Maybe you should just do it another way. You see what I'm driving at. Try to lower your fixed expenses. Again, if you've got a fancy car and you're making payments on a debt for a fancy car, maybe you should liquidate that car and get an inexpensive vehicle. That would lower your fixed expenses. Your payments would be a whole lot less on a cheaper car. You get the point. See if you can boost your income. You know, I've known people who've taken on second and third jobs. When I was a younger man, I did too. There are ways. Maybe you can do something. Maybe you've got a hobby making things that you might be able to sell on the side. I don't know. But look to see what you can do to boost your income. And then look at the stuff that you owe. Look at those balances you owe and ones with high interest rates and ask yourself, can I find a way of getting rid of those debts, the high interest rate ones, by replacing them with something where I'm not paying as much in interest? Every coin you put into just paying interest is a coin you're not paying on the real debt. It's amazing how much you can save in terms of monthly costs by just going to a lower interest rate debt. It's something to look at. And then find the debt that's got the highest interest rate. Work on that debt. Found a way of lowering your fixed expenses. You've already lowered your variable expenses. You've got some extra cash now. Put it into that debt where you're paying the most in terms of interest, and get that one gone first. Then, when it's all paid off, there's a different loan that's got the highest interest rate. tackle that one and just keep moving down the list. Does that sound simplistic? I hope so. It is. Does that mean it's not an appropriate approach? No, it doesn't. Again, when you're in debt, when you're paying interest on borrowed money, well, I mean, you're putting money into someone else's pocket and getting no benefit from it other than having had the privilege of having their money for a while. And speaking of budgets, speaking of getting into debt, getting out of debt, there's a whole thing out there called scams. And you need to be able to spot a scam. I mean, I get scam phone calls pretending to be the police, telling me they're going to arrest me if I don't immediately send vast volumes of money to something or other. I've been told that my bank needs me to send them huge amounts of money or I'm going to be arrested, stuff like that. I get those all the time. I'm sure you do too. Get emails telling me that if I'll just send a couple of hundred US dollars to this address, they will send me $1 million back. Scams are out there. People want to get your money dishonestly, and they'll stop at nothing to get it. So how do you spot one? Well, be suspicious if it sounds too good to be true. Free stuff, quick, easy money. You know, my dad always told me, and my granddad even told me, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Do your research, do your homework, and, ooh, here's the tough bit. Think. If you get a call or somebody at the door or an email or a Twitter or a tweet or a text and they want personal information about your bank account, they want information about you as a person, those are often scams as well. And they'll take that information and clean out your bank account. They'll take that information and they will use knowledge about your name, your address, and other critical information. They'll use that to go into debt in your name and then walk away and never pay it off, and they'll come for you. Anytime you're getting pressured to make a decision, you've got to decide now, or I'll go find somebody else to make all of this huge amount of money. You know, if you're being pressured, you've got 2 minutes to make your decision. That's how scam artists get people to make stupid decisions. Hey, and if it comes out of the blue, and it's somebody you've never heard of, I don't care whether it's by email, phone, text, they're standing on your doorstep, it's posted to you, mailed to you, I don't care. If it comes out of the blue, you have no reason to expect it, and you've never heard of the company, check. There are places on the internet where you can check to see if this is, if they haven't got it. You know, a phone number you can find on the web. If you can't find them in your phone book, don't trust it. If you've got to pay something up front to get a windfall, that's basically them trying to scam you to get the money, and the windfall isn't going to come. It's the way it mostly is. You're given contact details that are a mobile phone number, maybe a post office box for an address. Run, don't walk from that one, too. Again, that's characteristic of scam artists because once they've scammed you, they can throw away that phone. They can quit having that post office box, and you don't have a way of tracking them down. How to avoid being scammed? Well, there's a good idea to avoid being scammed. First of all, don't give out any information about yourself, your, you know, personal identification numbers, account numbers, password numbers to any unsolicited contact of any sort, no matter how it comes. If you don't know who they are, if you can't verify that they're who they claim to be, they have no right to your information. And in an email, get up there to that from line. I've gotten emails claiming to be my bank. I'll go up to the from line, and I'll hover over that to see the actual address it came from. And it's clearly, that ain't right. That's not the email address that I know is valid. You know, it's like, you know, Joe Smith at, you know, garbagedump.com. That's not my bank. No, that's not a federal agency. No, that's not, you know, the police or the fire department or anything. It's a scam artist. Hover and discover on all links. You know, they'll just ask you to click on this to download a document to look at it. What you're clicking on may not be a document. It may be something you're clicking on that will go to a website that will download malware. It may be downloading something that's going to steal not your information on your computer, but it's going to wait until you buy something and steal your credit card numbers. Look at those links. Hover over them and read them. And if they don't look on the up and up, delete the email and get on with life. So your bank's calling you or sending you an email and saying, you know, your account's overdrawn, you have to send, you know, $5,000 in Bitcoin. It being Bitcoin right there should be a red flag, a warning, but okay, I know who my bank is. I know their phone number. I'm going to call them up and ask. I got an email once several years ago from a colleague. He was trapped in London, and he wanted me to send him, you know, $500 so he could get a flight back here to Peoria. He'd lost his passport. His wallet had been stolen when his passport disappeared as well, and he's penniless in a foreign country. Right. So I got on the phone and dialed his number here in the city, and he answered the phone. He was no more in London than I was. I checked the source. I checked the claim. I didn't get scammed. And there's all kinds of antivirus software out there, anti-malware stuff out there, firewall software to protect your computer from sneaky invasions. I pay cash money for it. I've got stuff on my machine that has to be protected. I pay good money for it, but there's stuff out there that is freeware that you can download. Double check it before you download it. But there are places that will allow you to use their antivirus protection, their anti-malware protection, let you set up with a firewall using their stuff for nothing. Yeah, you'll have to put up with some advertising. I get that. It beats putting up with getting scammed or having your identity stolen. And please, this is so simple. This is so easy. It doesn't cost you a thing. Password protect your computer. By the way, don't let your computer out of your sight if it's a laptop. And if it's not a laptop, it stays at home or wherever it's supposed to be. But just password protect it. Yeah, somebody who really wants into that machine, there's software to crack your passwords. It takes time. I'm not worth attacking if that's what they've got to do. I've got some pretty rough passwords to work with. In fact, I store them electronically in an encrypted file where there's only one password to get into that. But just do it. Because then if your computer is idle, you put it into sleep mode, and you go and you come back a few minutes later, somebody could have gotten on there and made, you know, 10 tons of purchases on whatever using your stored information on there. But if it's password protected, they just can't do it. So there's the basics on avoiding scams.